When you picture a refugee, you might think of somebody from Syria or Sudan. But lately, people fleeing to the U.S. sound more like this guy.
Я Кревський Богдан, я приїхав із України, місто Луцьк, Волинська область.
My name is Bogdan Krevsky, and I came from Ukraine, Lutsk City, Volyn region.
It turns out that right now, Ukrainians are the third largest group of refugees coming to the United States. Bogdan was settled in Bucks County last month, joining a lot of other Ukrainians who've been coming here. The makeup of refugees to this country is changing, and the places they're going are changing too. Why is that happening, and what's it look like in Pennsylvania? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. Laura Benchoff is a reporter for WHYY's Keystone Crossroads. So, Laura, before we talk about who's coming to Pennsylvania, let's just put a definition out there. What is a refugee?
So a refugee is a person with a well-founded fear of persecution, and that language comes from the United Nations, and the U.S. adopted it actually relatively recently. It was in 1980 that President Jimmy Carter signed the Refugee Act, which sort of created our current formal system of accepting people on a rolling basis.
So we think of that as like a founding principle of the United States, like give me your tired, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, but this is actually really recent that we put this into law?
That's true. I mean, for a long time, there just was no consideration of, are you fleeing? Are you scared? Are you in danger around U.S. immigration policy? And that really started changing after World War II. There was a law that passed in 1948, accepting a lot of people who'd been displaced.
Aboard the Portuguese liner Serpa Pinto, the war's youngest refugees arrive in America to begin life anew. Wanderers upon the face of the earth, they come from Poland, from Czechoslovakia, from Spain, some even from Germany, and all are made welcome.
After Vietnam, there were many people fleeing Southeast Asia.
De May, 1975, the end of the American presence in Vietnam. Refugees scrambled aboard the last plane out. In those final frantic days, we took more than 100,000 of them back to the United States.
And there were some ad hoc laws, and then with the Refugee Act of 1980, it was sort of like, okay, we're formalizing this. We're going to make this a standing policy as opposed to something that's just there to respond to global disasters.
And how does it work at this point? Like, is there a limit of refugees that we'll take?
Every year, the president sits down with Congress and military leaders, and supposedly they come together to set a number based on what they see happening all over the world and what the needs are. And it's a ceiling. It's not a floor. So if it doesn't get met, it doesn't get met every year, but that's sort of the goal. And the White House has a ton of power to set that number.
So where has the Trump administration come down on that number, that limit?
The Trump administration has been pretty aggressively cutting the number of refugees pretty much almost since the day Trump took office. One of his first executive orders dealt with the refugee resettlement program and halted it altogether for a period of about 6 months so that the Department of Homeland Security could impose new restrictions. So when it restarted, it became much, much harder for people from countries like Syria or South Sudan to come to the U.S.
For many years, leaders in Washington brought large numbers of refugees to your state from Somalia without considering the impact on schools and communities and taxpayers. I promise you that as president, I would put in place enhanced vetting and responsible immigration controls.
He's been lowering the cap every year. So it was at an all-time high under Obama. And now this past year, Trump set it at an all-time low of 18,000 refugees.
I mean, certainly the numbers have come down, and we like that.
There are people who think this is exactly the right thing he should be doing. I spoke to a guy named Roy Beck, who is the executive director of a think tank called Numbers USA. And, you know, their stance is that just as a proportion of the number of people in the U.S., there are too many immigrants. So they like seeing any time you can pull that number down. But then obviously there are a lot of people who look at what President Trump is doing and say this is us giving up our status as a safe haven in the world, as a place that's going to take you in if you're fleeing, you know, genocide or an authoritarian leader. I spoke to Mark Unger, who directs, you know, refugee resettlement for a group called Bethany Christian Services. And that was basically his point.
From my perspective, when you think of the number of people, displaced people in the world today, to think that we would turn our back and not respond to that need just doesn't sound like the United States that I know.
So where were people coming from before Trump?
I spoke to a man earlier this year named Mohammed.
I kidnapped 2 times in Iraq.
By who?
Militia. Because I work for a telecommunication company, and they thought I work for the, you know, for the American troops.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't work for them?
No.
They suspected you.
Yeah.
He didn't want his face or last name used because of his sort of sensitive family situation in Iraq, but he came to Pennsylvania from Iraq with his wife and children 6 years ago after being displaced for another 6 years, sort of being stateless, going through this long vetting process, but has now assimilated, learned English. His kids are in college.
One of them, she may be studying something in medical. The other one, she's studying Middle East studies.
Very ambitious family.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You know, people with that life trajectory are still coming, but you're just getting fewer people who sort of were the image you would have in your head when you're thinking of who is a refugee.
So if there are fewer people coming from these countries that have been flagged, where are the majority of people coming from?
Statistically, the Migration Policy Institute says the number one country sending people right now is the Democratic Republic of Congo. That checks out with what I've heard from folks in Pennsylvania, across Pennsylvania. They're getting people from the Congo, some people from places like Burma, and they're getting a lot of Ukrainians right now. Mm. Ukrainians have sort of ascended in the ranking list as other groups have fallen lower and are sending fewer people.
Why Ukrainians?
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
There's this policy that is a little bit of a relic from the Cold War era. It passed in 1990, and it basically started out just being focused on religious minorities from Eastern Europe. And this carve-out was created that said, okay, if the bar to be a refugee is normally like, yay, hi, we're going to set it a bit lower for this group of folks. It doesn't have to be you're fleeing war or famine. Just prove that you're a part of a religious minority and we'll let you in.
Right. So it's been more about religious persecution than these sort of like urgent conflicts, civil war, things like that.
That's right. It's much more subtle what folks experience who are, say, evangelical Christians fleeing Ukraine, which is the story of Bohdan Krevsky, a guy I interviewed back in September.
Я Кревський Богдан, я приїхав із України.
He just came here from Ukraine. His family belongs to an evangelical Christian church. You know, his grandparents fled and came here in the early 90s, and so he came on basically the same program.
It's called post-Soviet syndrome, and there are still people who don't like our church, and their kids and grandkids have the same mentality.
And he admitted that the discrimination isn't as bad as it was when his grandparents fled, but it's still there. It can show up as bullying in school or, you know, a harder time finding a job. And people know that they have this option. They can come to the U.S. And so he did.
When we come back,
we are proud to stand up for a different vision for our city and for America, to push back on the hate being driven by the White House.
This is The Why.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. We're talking to Keystone Crossroads reporter Laura Benchoff about how Trump's immigration policy is changing the refugees coming to the U.S. and to Pennsylvania. How has Pennsylvania overall been impacted by refugee policy?
Pennsylvania is not one of the states that receives the most refugees, but there are some hubs around the state. So when the numbers go up, when that big picture presidential cap is bigger, more people go to all those places. And when the number goes down, fewer refugees go to those places. And we've seen the numbers drop. You know, in 2016, there were 3,600 people who are resettled in Pennsylvania. The next year, it was 1,000 fewer people. And then this year, it's going to be fewer than 1,000 total. Total in the state. So places that have been planning for many more people to come suddenly have to plan to downsize and pull back resources. And then there's another complicating factor around the same time this year that Trump announced he was again going to slash the number of refugee arrivals. There was an executive order issued that said, going forward, we're going to try to only place refugees in states and localities that specifically consent to receiving them.
And how has the state reacted to that executive order?
Governor Wolf actually just put out a statement yesterday saying he wants to reaffirm Pennsylvania's commitment to welcoming refugees. It doesn't explicitly name that executive order, but it seems clear based on some of the language in it that this is him sort of publicly saying, you know, if other states reject these families, they will be welcomed in Pennsylvania. But we still don't know yet, is this the kind of letter that means, okay, cool, refugees will keep coming here, or will there be some other test? Will specific municipalities get to have a say, or counties? We don't know at what level of government yet local control over this generally federal issue is going to be given.
Well, does this mean places like Philadelphia, places that are very expressly immigrant friendly, are going to be the ones to step forward, and that's where you're going to see refugees resettling?
That could happen. I mean, Philadelphia does put itself out there as an immigrant friendly city.
A safe and thriving Philadelphia is directly tied to the strength and stability of immigrant families in Philadelphia.
But I also think we can't ignore that some hubs, some places that have really sought to take in refugees have been places like Erie and the Lehigh Valley and Lancaster. And these are not necessarily your traditional, you know, urban areas.
Yeah. So why would they be the ones to step forward?
I think there's a business case for it. You know, having interviewed people who have been resettled in places like Allentown, you know, they tend to work in pretty difficult industries like meatpacking. They tend to not have a lot of other options. And so they're not going to jump from job to job. They can, so in that way, they can be a pretty desirable labor force. And also some parts of Pennsylvania have really experienced population loss. And, you know, some people in local government see bringing in these families who are willing to put down roots and really invest in the place that they're resettled as an investment in the future of those places, right? A way to revitalize neighborhoods where people have left and a way to sort of add to the labor force and the tax base. So it's definitely more complicated than urban versus rural or red state versus blue state.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you, Shai.
Laura Benchoff is a reporter for Keystone Crossroads. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Send a tweet at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll see you tomorrow.